the reason these disturbances, they followed you to a new home, is because it's not the house that's haunted. It's your son.
So 1,100 men went in the war. 316 men come out. The Sharks took the rest June the 29th, 1945. Anyway, we delivered the bomb.
Never, ever, ever, under any circumstances, say, I'll be right back. Because you won't be back.
You get another beer, you want one?
Yeah, sure.
I'll be right back!
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
Oh, shit.
My name is Robert Hawkins. Approximately 7 hours ago, something attacked the city. You found this. If you're watching this, then you know more about it than I do.
California, stay away from it. Stay away from it. I'll come with you. John Doe has the upper hand.
And on that day, Ahab will go to his grave, but he'll rise again within the hour. He will rise and beckon that all save one shall follow.
They're all gonna laugh at you! They're all gonna laugh at you! They're all gonna laugh at you!
Hello, welcome once again to Dark Discussions, your place for discussion of horror, film, fiction, and all that's fantastic. I'm one of your co-hosts, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire in the U.S. of A., and with me in the state of Michigan.
This is Eric.
Eric, how's it going, my friend?
Well, if everything has gone as initially planned, I'd be settling into a hotel in Oregon right now, getting ready for a day of hiking tomorrow in the Columbia River Gorge.
Because nothing ever could go wrong with hiking along a river. We've never seen any stories about that.
All did not go as planned, so instead, I'm still in Michigan talking to you guys.
Very good, very good. Very good.
Much safer option.
I would probably be up in Maine right now for Father's Day weekend and all that. So, anyway, and we have someone from the state of New York.
Hey, this is Mike.
Mike, how's it going?
I'm fine, Phil. How are you?
I'm doing all right. And a Connecticut American?
This is Chrissy.
Chrissy, how's it going?
It's pretty good right now.
Excellent. For folks who are curious, this is June 18th that we are recording this episode, which is a Thursday of 2020. So that's for Pam. Also, I'd like to give my respects to Barrett. His cat just passed away today.
Sad. Kitty. Yeah.
Sorry, Barrett.
Yeah, it's kind of sucks.
There seems to be a plague of that going around.
Yeah, yours last week, right?
For a week and a half. 2 weeks ago, and there was a note of another one. It's I know a couple people who've lost their pets recently. I know there's at least a dog who passed. It's not good.
It's not. They're proud of the family. For folks who are new to the podcast, we are Dark Discussions Podcast, where we discuss horror, sci-fi, fantasy, thrillers, techno thrillers, mysteries, grindhouse, art house, midnight movies, cult movies, drive-in films, and all sorts of genre films. Basically, we try to talk intelligently about a genre that deserves intelligence. We have an email at darkdiscussions@aol.com where you can email us and give us your feedback, suggestions, emails about topics we talked about and your opinions, and we will read your emails on the podcast. You follow us on Twitter, Dark Discussion One, and then we have a Facebook group, Dark Discussions Podcast Facebook group, where you can join in the discussion or start your own discussion. Eric, we have a website?
We do. You can find that website at www.darkdiscussions.com, and while you're there, you can find a bunch of things. On the right-hand side of the front page are links to friends of the podcast, so be sure to visit all them. Up at the top of the page, you'll find links to an article section that has articles written by myself as well as others. There's also an audio section, and there you will find every single episode of Dark Discussions as well as any of the spinoff podcasts available to download for free. Bound to be something that interests you there, so check that out. Front and center on the front page is a link to our Patreon account. Patreon is a service that allows you to support your online artists. Producing this podcast is not free. We have to pay for things like movie rentals and equipment and server fees and all that kind of good stuff. So if you'd like to help us offset the cost of producing this show, That's how you can do it. For every $5 a month that you care to donate, you'll have the opportunity to submit a topic for us to possibly do a show on. We take all the submissions from our patrons, and on a quarterly basis, we draw one at random to do a show on. So if you'd like to support us in that manner, we'd certainly appreciate it. You can go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions or follow the link on the front page of darkdiscussions.com.
Yep, and at this time, the Patreon is really important because we are actually redeveloping the website. Basically,
let's be clear, and by we, Phil means him because he does all the hard work. Thank you, Phil.
Yes.
and the rest of us are lazy.
Yes.
It's not like I have anything better to do. I don't. I'm just, and I also wouldn't know what the fuck I'm doing.
Yes, yeah, so,
I could design with a crayon, maybe.
I bought a couple of books, and then I had to purchase a second URL. Or hosting area, and so I'm doing all my development over there and transferring all the stuff over. It's taking a while, too, because there's 440-something episodes of Dark Discussions, never mind all that stuff. So it's been a lot of work but and an extra chunk of change, but it's going well. And trying to get that ready for a couple of reasons. The first thing is it'll make article section much easier to do, where I wouldn't have to manually format. So when Eric sends me an article, for example, I could just plop it right up and it'll be up in like 3 seconds rather than manually work in the HTML like I have to now. And then also, just in case...
I'll have to write another article before you get that done.
Yeah, I mean, if people want to go back and look at the article, the last article we have up there in our forecast as to the outcome of the 2016 election, and, you know, feel free.
And also, with unfortunate news in the podcast world, Horrorphilia Network is closing, and Jason Lloyd has decided to pack it up by February, I think, of next year, 2021. And so there's a few podcasts over there that may want to come over here, and this will make it easier to get all those podcasts available and ready to go too. So once I heard Horrorphilia was going down, I immediately started building that day the new website. So
yeah, it's kind of like, well, when you hear that person who's got the corner office is retiring, and you all like offer your congratulations or your condolences, and then, like, as soon as nobody's looking, you race to put in your claim. No, I think we welcome our future podcast overlords, and we welcome aboard. I don't know what happened with Jason Lloyd.
I think at least what he said publicly is that he's just done. It's time for him to focus his efforts elsewhere, and that's fine. I totally get it.
What else does he have? He doesn't even pay for his movies.
He got that awesome Jaws thing. He won't get.
He
any
does
more
have
of those
a life
things.
Outside of this.
I so question
it's not
that.
Like, it's not like he makes a living podcasting. Yeah. Thank you, Jason, for everything. It's sad to see the Horrorphilia Network go away. But at least he was considerate enough to announce it ahead of time, so people could make other plans instead of just not showing up one day, which, you know, that's happened in the past in other places.
Oh, yeah, even to podcasts that said we will never just disappear because it's a shitty thing for people to do. Right.
I wasn't going to go there, but
And then they just disappeared. And I want to be clear when I say they just disappeared. It wasn't like they had died in a terrible accident or got arrested on child pornography charges or something. They just stopped giving a fuck. That was basically it, yes.
Yeah, so kudos to Jason for at least acknowledging his desire to not do it anymore and giving people a heads up. So thanks for everything, Jason. Good luck in whatever you choose to do next.
Yeah, and the thing, too, is that Jason isn't just a podcaster, so not only will folks miss his show, and so he's letting people know in advance, but he hosts like 20 different podcasts or so on his network, and he wanted to let all those folks that have those podcasts know in advance too, so they can do their prep, and that was real good that he did that. So he will be missed.
Dang, he's just not going to do the podcasting anymore.
That's right. But as I always tell him, the Bits is the best podcast. That is the best podcast. So it will be missed. But yes, as a human being, we will not miss him because hopefully he'll hang around as he's did before. He did mention, though, that he won't guest host anymore either. So he's literally like shutting the door on podcasting, and he's going to just be a listener now.
So, well, let's also remember if you've paid attention to music at all for the last 30 or 40 years, there's always a big musician, you know, who has their retirement tour after like when they're 30. I'm never doing it again. And then, yep, you know, they just get rested and bored and then they come back. And, you know, we all need a break sometimes. And I think that's understandable. I know he's saying he's done. I'm going to hang a giant asterisk on it. I don't care how much he would argue it. He's done for now. He may come back. It may just be as a guest spot. Even Horror Etc., not that we were referencing them earlier in this podcast, even Horror Etc. dropped, you know, surprise podcasts after they quietly went away into that good night. So, you know, there he may still...
a few months ago, actually.
Yeah. So they may still... He may still come back, but, you know, he's done a lot of work, and he is very much like a Phil. He's doing a lot of the behind the scenes work. And again, I always say, if you're going to have a successful podcast, you must start with a Phil. I have no idea how much work and effort Phil is going into while also trying to raise, two daughters while his wife is trying to raise him.
That is fair.
Yep. I do not know a single married man where that is not the case, Eric, myself included.
Mike is right. Mike is right.
Cool. I'm not saying great. We don't that fight it every inch of the way. Up. But, I'm just saying I wish him well in his retirement. I'm just saying I am expecting a comeback tour sometime before 2024.
Yeah, hopefully so. He's always...
He's a fiction.
There you go.
Well, you know, and that is what happens sometimes, though. I think all artists kind of go through a time when they just sort of burn out and they need a break. And I had a friend who she's written like over 30, 40 novels. And like I think it was a year and a half ago or 2 years ago. She's like, I'm done. I'm retiring. I'm never doing this again. And all of us in writer's group just kind of went, okay, Lauren. And we threw her a little goodbye party and all of us knew. And we're just like, we were taking bets on how long it was going to take her to start again. Sure enough, 6 months later, I've got this new project and I'm doing this. And we're like, yep, that lasted. You just needed 6 months off is really all you needed. So, yeah.
Well, yeah. And you can't see it though while you're in it.
No,
right?
You can't. You can't because you get so burned out. You're just so exhausted. You're just like, Forever looks really good, you know, and then you get to Forever. Did you know that there's actually a statistic out there that the average lifespan of somebody living once they retire is 5 years?
Yeah, I heard that. I'm sure it's probably a little different now, but yeah, I know that study.
Yeah, yeah, you've heard of it, right? I'm not. No, yeah. Well, it's older too. It is. You're right, Phil. It may be different now, but I think it was like, I don't know. I think I remember reading it like a long time ago, like 10, 12 years ago, that the average person lives 5 years beyond their retirement. That's really sad. Right.
Well, and it's because
I think they don't find something else to fulfill them is really what it is. If they find something else, I think they're okay. But if they don't, then, you know, if they have no purpose, so what's the point of going forward?
And
you know,
they also are more apt to just sit in front of the TV and eat pizza and ding-dongs, and that's not
necessarily that there's anything thing. Wrong with that.
What's wrong with that?
Nothing. But
I'm being attacked.
You know what? I really could use some ding-dong right now. That would be great.
They are good. They are good. And I'm talking about the dessert.
Really? Because I wasn't.
Yeah, I kind of gathered. That's why I clarified and said dessert.
I'm in rare form tonight.
Not that there's anything wrong with that. All right, so... So anybody that wants to donate to Patreon, it's greatly appreciated. Like most podcasts, we don't have too much money coming in from Patreon, but anything... to help, especially if it will help get the new website up and articles more available, and help out some of the podcasts from Horrorphilia to get them on board, if that is the case. Anything will help. Appreciate it. And to those who donate now, thank you very much. All right, so I think we can get into our topic tonight. I think that was the only real big news I had about the Horrorphilia and Jason Lloyd. So, Eric, what are we going to discuss tonight?
Tonight, we're going to be talking about a film that was made in 2018 but did not get a full release until this year. And the title of the film is The Dark Red.
I've read your file. I'd like to hear you tell your own story. I don't need another therapist. I need to leave. I was 8 months pregnant. What happened? My baby was taken.
Sybil?
Your baby died. What I'm telling you, it's the truth. Extreme early childhood trauma, extensive history of mental illness, and psychotic delusions. I know you gotta be sick of being held against your will. Not for long. Are you hearing anything or seeing anything out of the ordinary?
That's right. The Dark Red played this festival circuits for a pretty good amount of time, as Eric said. So almost an entire year and a few months. So all of 2019 and whatnot. It basically did the festival circuit. It's actually a film directed by someone that was kind of known as an up-and-comer, but kind of faded out for a few years. Dan Bush, he's one of the three directors of the kind of zombie film The Signal that was like a not an anthology, but a three directors put segments together and they made a film, and it got a lot of buzz back then when it first came out eight years ago. And then this guy here, Bush, who's one of the three that was considered an up-and-comer, kind of just faded out, didn't really do much, at least as a director. And then this film suddenly popped up about a month ago. I actually reviewed this, speaking of Horrorphilia and Bloody Bits and Jason Lloyd, as a 5-minute review on the Bloody Bits earlier this year, because Jason Lloyd let me do the review for it. It stars April Billingsley and a number of other folk, so no one of real note. And it was written by Dan Bush, as well as someone named Connell Byrne. And that's pretty much all I have about it. It was one of those.
Connell Byrne is also one of the stars of the film, just FYI, in case you missed that.
Oh, yeah, right. Connell Byrne. Yeah, there you go. David Holyfield. The one other thing to mention is that it does have 8 reviews on Rotten Tomatoes for a 75% good review rating, and some of the reviews that really only Variety is and Austin Chronicle, so it got a few reviews from some bigger places. The Austin Chronicle is probably a fantastic fest, or one of those Austin or South by Southwest reviews, because that's where it's Austin's has all those festivals, and then Variety I mentioned. So all right, so I guess we can get into our I guess how we found out about this film and what we thought about it. And I actually heard about it way back. I'll start. Yeah, I heard about it because Jason Lloyd said, Phil, you want to do a review on Buddy Bits? And I said, sure. And he gave me a handful of films to choose from, and I for some reason I chose this one. So I watched it back then, and then, of course, I rewatched it for this episode here. I think it's a pretty solid film. I was actually surprised that this Bush guy did disappear, because this film shows that he still can do pretty good. I don't know if it's a fantastic film, but it's definitely a solid film. And the last half hour was kick-ass, too. So it's almost like an action film, too. And the odd thing is we always talk about the woman, or at least I say this, they're turning the woman into superheroes in horror films nowadays for the Scream Queen. And in this case, actually, this woman kind of is a becomes an expert, but we'll get into all that. But a pretty good film, and thumbs up, recommended. Eric?
I came across this just while browsing movies one night on my Apple TV, and it looked semi-intriguing, so I put it in my list. And another night I was going through my list and chose that one and watched it and enjoyed the movie and suggested it as a topic on the show.
All right, very good. Chrissy?
I was pleasantly surprised by this movie. I found it just incredibly interesting. It's almost a dark love story, but it's also kind of a crazy cocktail of, like, I don't know, a psycho ward story, a supernatural story, and a revenge story.
And gaslighting, too.
And gaslighting, and, like, it all works. Like, it's just the script is... Not only does it all work, and it's all very clear, because I think this is one of those scripts that, with all these different elements in it, it really could get very sloppy and confusing very quickly, and it just doesn't. It's tight. It's beautifully written, too. Some of the language in this is just very eloquent. It certainly uses not only a great deal of, you know, romantic language and imagery in the first half, but it has material that makes you think, because a lot of what's said is universal truth. I thought the acting was great. I thought it was well-paced. I thought there was a little something for everybody in this, realistically speaking. There's a mystery with a few twists to keep you on your toes. And I just thought this was a really unique piece of cinema. I recommend this. I don't think I've ever seen another movie like this. It's just kind of interesting. Like, it's weird and fresh, but it's not weird. It's not like weird, fresh, pretentious, weird, fresh. Do you know what I mean? And it's not like this is confusing, weird, fresh. It's like, I don't know. This movie just worked for me. I liked
it. Yeah, it had multiple acts that were very different from each other, and yet the screenwriters put it together really well. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I didn't feel like it was one of those movies where, you know how sometimes we get a movie and we get halfway through it and we go, okay, wow, like the mood changed, everything changed, what happened here? I think the tone was very consistent, and I think that's why it worked. Because the tone really, they really kept, they set their pacing, they set their tone, and they stuck with it, even though the three acts are very different from each other. I thought that was really well done. I just think it's very well done. So those are my thoughts on it.
Very good. Mike?
I first learned about this movie while I was recovering from surgery last Thursday and got a text message from Phil telling me we're covering The Dark Red for this week's episode. I don't think I had ever heard of it before. If I had heard of it, I completely forgot about it. I'm going to be honest, I don't know that I was in a great headspace while watching this film. I found it kind of hard for it to grab my attention. There is nothing I can say about the film that was bad. I think a lot of ways there's a lot of really good stuff about it. But there's also was a feeling for at least the first two thirds of the movie where I felt like I've kind of seen this before. It does take a different tack at the end, although again, it feels to me like it was a tack I've just seen in different films, not necessarily the tact I've seen in films similar to the first two parts. Because it is very much that unreliable narrator. The story is, as a story is being told by, the narrative device is a young woman in therapy, and she's telling her story. And of course we're intended to have real questions as to if she's remembering the events as they actually played out or not. And it just feels like we've done a number of films like that. There's nothing wrong with it. What's there is fine. The performances are fine. The direction is fine. The writing is fine. I just was having a hard time mentally getting myself in there. And I'm not sure if that's the film or if that was entirely me, because again, we were talking about burnout and other things before the podcast. And I just really wasn't, I don't know if I was in the right headspace to, it just didn't grab me. But there was nothing wrong with it. I did recommend it to my wife, who is upstairs actually watching it right now. I'm curious to see what she has to say, because she usually likes movies about somebody who is, mental health, behavioral health individuals?
Behavioral health individuals.
Yeah, she usually likes movies about wackadoodles, about wackadoodle health individuals. So I'm curious to see what her response to it is. And it just may be a question of me not being in the right place at the right time when I was watching it. That's not a criticism of the film, because this is not like some movies where I can honestly say this is what I saw in it and this is what I didn't like about it. I can recognize all the stuff that it did and did fairly well.
Right. So similar to like I was with After Midnight. It's a good film, but
yeah,
it just
maybe
didn't work. Something like that, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
All right. That's fair. That's fair. You don't have to apologize for just thinking it was okay.
If I had watched this 3 months ago, or if I watched it 3 months from now, I could very well have a very different take. It really is very much of, I know that my head is not in a particularly good place at the moment. For a variety of reasons, and
can't imagine why.
I don't think anybody's is.
True.
Right.
Okay. That's fair. Yeah.
So yeah, it's just I said that, and then you throw on top of it all the other stuff, and it's the wrapping up for me the end of the school year, and that I did have the surgery last week, and all these other things that I was dealing with. And I just, that's not a woe is me thing. It's just a distracted brain thing that was probably to blame, because I really haven't had an easy time focusing on stuff, period.
It's all good.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah, fair and enough. It is. I do want to add this one thing, though, Mike. I can understand where you're coming from with that. Just to throw it out there before we start talking about it. This is definitely not a movie that you like throw on in the background, and like you really have to be in the mood to like plunge into this movie and just let the whole world go away. It's one of those movies. It doesn't require a lot of thought or anything, but it is one of those movies that you do need to kind of disappear into, which is what makes it appealing. If you're looking for something to just lose yourself for a little while, then this is good. But if you're just kind of like, I just want to watch a horror film and have a few good laughs, then no, this is not that movie. I'm just saying that, just to say that.
All right, fair enough. All right, so Eric, do we have a wiki?
Wiki? Wiki, wiki! The way you said that just then was really funny. Wiki.
Well, dark discussion.
Our dark discussion about the dark red.
I was thinking about Super Dark Times. Someone said that on the news today. I go, oh my God, that's a great movie. But they weren't talking about the movie. They were talking about the Super Dark Times.
Right.
Anyway, sir.
Here we go. Wiki, wiki. A young woman is committed to a psychiatric hospital, because she's wackadal, and claims her newborn was stolen by a secret society to harvest its supernatural blood.
Now, that is I guess fair, because we learn that pretty quick. At least that's what she kind of says, I think. But reading, if I went in reading that, I would have said, this sounds the stupidest film. That is supernatural blood. What the hell is this? The X-Men or something?
Well, kind of. Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it's kind of an X-Men story. Yeah, it is.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, but fortunately I went in blind because, I did it. Well, I usually go in blind anyway, like The Lodge. I didn't even read what that was about. I don't know. I mean, I would tell people not to worry about what the IMDb wiki or whatever said, because it's more than just that, this film, a little bit, I think.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so that's fair. So, all right, so before we throw out the spoiler alert and all that other good stuff, where we're going to talk about everything and anything, I guess we could talk about just general things. What do people think of this supernatural bud thing that we read in the wiki? I guess that's, again, it's not a spoiler because it's right there in the wiki.
It's a little weird, but it was interesting. I'll say that I thought April Billingsley and Kelsey Scott were both fantastic in this film. Kelsey Scott was the actor that played the doctor that was interviewing her. I really enjoyed the scenes with the two of them in a room, having conversations. I may have liked it better than the last part of the movie, whereas Phil seems to have found that more interesting.
Well, because it was vengeance.
Right. So, I liked all their conversations, and, I was thinking the whole time, man, I hope she's not actually crazy, because this story is awesome.
Well, yeah.
She was telling it to the doctor. I was like, oh, I hope this is all true. Oh, I hope this is all true.
Yeah. No, that's a fair point. I mean, and they set it up interesting, too, because, like, at first, I didn't like the wackadoodle, as you would call it, Eric. And then I didn't like the doctor. And then I just kind of started liking both, because the doctor was actually doing her job and wasn't just a putz. And so that was good.
That is kind of what was interesting about this movie too, in that you kind of ended up liking everybody, even David at the end, you kind of felt a little bad for. Maybe not the parents, okay?
I was going to say, not everybody.
Not everybody, but the main characters that we see.
Yeah, the main three characters.
The main three characters we actually all feel sympathy for. And actually, even the other woman, right? The other woman that he gets. You feel bad for her, too.
Yeah,
like,
that's true.
It's interesting how this movie kind of played with your sympathies. Because at first you're like, oh, great, here's another movie with a wackadoodle chick and it's unreliable narrator, and, you know, and she's not very likable in the first couple of minutes there when the doctor first comes in. I mean, she's an asshole.
Absolutely.
And you're
absolutely
just like, oh, man. And I remember thinking, oh, God, am I going to have to watch 2 hours of an Alanis Morissette lookalike getting mad and screaming the F word because I'm not going to go for this. But then she becomes a person, really, and they become vulnerable. And I think that's the thing, is that all of these characters that we end up liking, even David, they all express vulnerability. And that's what makes us kind of give them a pass sometimes, because we can understand them. They're like us. You know, they were really real. I just felt they were very real people.
I got to be honest, I didn't have any sympathy towards the baby. I just didn't buy his performance.
Well,
they a bit of a dick.
Suck. They suck anyway. They
yeah,
got nothing
I just,
going on.
You know, I just felt no empathy towards him whatsoever.
You know,
they just
sit
there and scream and poop.
Scream and poop. Yep, that's what they do. Eat, sleep, and shit.
No, but I was just gonna say, I thought the acting in this film was really well done, and I also enjoyed, you know what? Never mind. I'll point that out after spoiler flags up.
Sure. But I think maybe they used all of last year to get it. I think maybe they were trying to get it to be released by a bigger company like IFC or someone like that, that's the reason it did the festival circuit. This is just a guess because, you know, I've seen a number of pretty decent films that get stuck to the festival circuit for a long time because of distribution problems, because they're either hard to market or they're extreme or something. And this film, as you mentioned, Eric, 2018 was when it was completed. And then all last year, 2019, it did the festival run. And so I think they knew they had a pretty well-crafted screenplay and very, very strong acting. And speaking of what Eric mentioned, the guy that plays David, Connell Byrne, is one of the co-screenwriters. And so I think that's maybe the reason why it dragged out for the 16 months or so to get finally released, probably because they just had to go with a Gravitas, whatever, or whoever released this film, instead of the normal stuff that they were probably going for, which was like IFC or bigger.
And it also may have been, 'cause I don't know what conversations are had around all of that type of activity with the pandemic going on. I know a lot of the big blockbuster films got pushed off and I think are still hoping for a theatrical release. But some of these smaller films where they may have been pushing for a small theatrical release initially, may have done an about face when the pandemic started and been like, you know what? This is a window. Everybody's stuck at home. Let's get it on VOD now.
Right, right. Yeah, and that's could be a possibility too. For example, the new Kevin Bacon film just landed on VOD, but it's one of those $20
rentals.
Don't
anybody rent it at $19.99. Don't you support those money-grubbing fuckers.
Yeah, and that one was supposed to be one of the early summer releases at theaters too, and they just decided to, because it's now looking like the second wave is going to hit in September and there's going to be no baseball and they're saying there's no NFL now, so who knows. And so I think yeah, they're going to start doing that eventually and start sucking it up and just releasing it to VOD.
So does this mean Tom Brady and for the Buccaneers or whoever it was he was playing for?
That's looking that way. Yep. That's
what a shame. Like.
Yeah, a shame. But yeah, so the VOD, getting them out now is probably a smart thing before the studios start doing the same thing. And as long as they're doing $20 rentals, as you said, Eric, the smaller companies still have a chance. Let's see. Anything else anybody wanted to bring up before we talk about spoilers or anything like that? Anything else in general about the film that was interesting that wouldn't spoil it? Anything? All right. No, that's fair. Because, yeah, it is like a lot of twists and turns and spoilers. So it's hard to talk about the film without getting into specifics.
Right, right.
All right. So we'll throw out the spoiler now. So anybody who wants to see the film, it's VOD, available rental anywhere and everywhere. And if you want to check it out, go see it. And then you can come back. But if you're not worried about spoiling it, so some of our listeners, like Kevin Letts, like listening to our podcast anyway. So let's get into the spoilers. So all right, so what do you want to talk about? So we're talking about a woman that's a behavioral health individual who isn't being cooperative with her assigned doctor, which is in a sanitarium. And So
the first good part of the movie is just the two of them going through their sessions.
Yeah. Yeah. So
I will say that I really did enjoy how that was handled, because that could have been very boring. And also when you're dealing with flashbacks, those can be very jarring, but this was again handled very well. The pivot points were really well done. It didn't feel like, oh, let's talk about some stuff. Now we're going to have a flashback and let's drop it in. It all kind of flowed seamlessly. So you went from the two of them talking to the flashbacks. And also there was that really nice overlay going on where what they were talking about was relevant to the flashback, which some, mm-hmm. Some movies and books don't do that well. So I did want to point that out, that I thought that was especially well done.
Well, and the story being told is exactly what it said in the wiki, which is why they think this woman is crazy. I thought it was really well done, and probably my favorite line delivery in the entire movie is at one point the doctor tries to shut down a session when, oh, by the way, did you catch the main character's name, Sybil?
Sybil, of course. Yes, that was on my list of things to mention. Yep.
Yeah, that was
why does that matter?
I know my wife caught Pam like my, that's how I know she's watching the movie upstairs, is because she immediately messaged that to me while she was watching it.
Why does that matter? Is that her name, Sybil?
Do you not know of the book Sybil?
It was based on a
case of multiple personality disorders where this patient supposedly named Sybil. I think that was just a pseudonym. But had 17 distinct personalities. There was a movie about it back in the 70s.
And is it supposed to be factual?
It's fairly well known, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's factual, though.
Yeah, it's kind of the thing that kicked off the public interest in multiple personalities.
Yeah.
But is it factual, based on facts?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So I thought that was really good. So go ahead, Eric, because I have a couple.
So I was just going to say favorite line delivery in the whole movie is when the doctor, Sybil's getting a little riled up about something, and the doctor tries to shut down the session, and Sybil yells at her, "No, I want you to listen to the whole thing and then tell me I'm lying."
Yeah.
I love that line delivery. I thought it was fantastic.
So do I. Yeah, that was really well done. And I loved when she was talking about how she went with David. And the whole lovemaking scene, I thought that was really well done. The language is just beautiful. There's a whole thing about sex and death and funerals.
Right.
In that when people, after somebody dies, they want to feel alive. Yeah. And I thought that was beautifully handled, because she says, you know, I needed to be touched. I needed to feel the skin of another human being pressed against mine. I needed to feel their warmth. And, you know, I needed to feel his heart beating against mine. It's very romantic language. And yet you can feel the sadness and the tenderness in that scene. Like, it's not just shadow play sex like we normally get, like where you get, you know, oh, here's a sex scene, but it's like a montage of people half in the dark or, you know, whatever. It was the way that I think they shot it, and it was her description of it that made you feel, you could almost feel the, like I said, the sadness and the tenderness coming through that screen. And I just thought it was so well done. And there's also a clue there that they slip in, that he's got that tattoo, which is the first clue that something ain't right with him. And it's, at first you don't really, it registers. You're like, oh, I noticed that tattoo. But it wasn't like, tattoo, notice it now. Like, it was just kind of they show them holding hands and you just kind of see her brush his shirt back and you see the corner. You don't even see the whole thing, but you kind of get the point that, ooh, something's not right. But it's not glaringly like, look at me, look at me, look at me. I guess I didn't feel it was, anyway. So I thought that was well done.
Well, I think the first clue that you get is when he mentions his family, right? Because when, you know, I think that comes first, is that he just mentions that he's estranged from his family. In a movie like this, there's a reason they're mentioning that.
Yeah, and that's a fair point, because eventually he's going to introduce her to the family anyway, and so they had to at least establish that early. And then since the parents weren't going to be participating in what appears to be a good many months, if not a couple of years, of a relationship, that she never meets the parents and they have a child is born and all that other stuff.
It's about a year, because they mentioned that, because that she got pregnant around the time that her stepmother died,
right?
Her adoptive mother, whatever.
Actually,
so he knocked her up right after the funeral.
Yeah, it was the night of the funeral. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, That's right.
Or thereabouts.
Yeah, yeah.
Could have been the next night.
Yeah, right. It could have been at one in the morning or something.
They were fucking for 5 days straight. It's hard to keep track.
Yeah.
That's why we don't celebrate your conception day. You know, it's... It just conjures images we don't want to think about.
Yeah. You know what's kind of interesting about the whole film, too, is that the doctor or social worker or psychologist, whatever she is, actually mistakenly gaslights our patient Sybil to believe that everything you're telling me is fake, or at least Sybil pretends to believe that she had made it all up in her head.
Well, in fairness to the doctor, how much crazy shit do you think she's heard?
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
You know, yeah. if we were not watching this as a movie, if you were like sitting next to this woman on a bus and she told you this story,
right,
you are going home to your wife and saying, you won't believe the wackadoodle I was sitting next to on the bus.
Well, and the thing about it is that I thought they did a pretty good job of having Sybil be, at the same time that she's trying to make herself understand and trying to make the daughter understand that this actually did happen to her, she's also understanding of why nobody believes her. Because she gets what it sounds like, and given her past history of medication and such, she totally understands why people don't believe her, which, if anything, adds to her frustration.
Yes, and it also adds to her – well, it also gives us that feeling that maybe she's really not crazy, you know, because she does – because sometimes I think – characters in these movies that are like, no, I'm really telling you the truth, they kind of don't do anything to sort of up their believability factor. But because she definitely shows a thought process that's kind of logical, you're kind of sitting there in the beginning and you start rooting for her going, you know what, I do believe you. Like,
she doesn't
really
seem like a wackadoodle.
She doesn't come off as a nut, because you're actually buying her story because she is reasonable. She's like, look, I understand this sounds insane because of my history, but it's more than just characters in other movies I've seen where they're like, no, you don't understand. You have to believe me. Like, she's actually saying, listen, I get this. But this is exactly what happened to me, and this is the way it is, and I blah, 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 and this is how my brain works. That's the other thing. She shows herself to have an incredible self-awareness of her illness, her supposed illness, you know, and her conditions and all of this. She is very aware, like that whole moment where she talks about which is actually real horror, I thought. It was just an interesting kind of thing. You know, what we have are our memories, right? We're made of our memories.
Ooh, that was a great little speech.
That was so amazing and so universal and yet so terrifying. You know, the idea that every time you remember your first kiss or the first time you held your baby, it changes because your brain rebuilds it from scratch. Yep. And that is the moment when you realize that, yes, this woman is highly intelligent, but there's nothing manipulative about it. It's almost like, look, dude, this is the way the brain works. Like, I get this. And because she understands her own brain and her own condition and all of that, that also makes her a little bit more believable.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I like the speech, and it's a phenomenon I'm familiar with, but I don't necessarily know how exactly that kind of tied in with the rest of the film, because we do get kind of an answer to whether this is real or not by the time we get to the final act, right? So that is, it is useful if what your goal is to throw doubt and suspicion on everybody. But by the time we get to that last act, I'm pretty sure the doubt and suspicion was gone, at least for
me. Oh, no, I agree with that. I think that whole thing about the first kiss and all of that, I think that was really about persistence of memory and what she was really trying to convince this doctor or share with this doctor is that, you know, everybody's brain, what you think is real is not going to be another person's perception of what is real. I think that was what she was really trying to say there. I loved that speech so much. I like went back and listened to it like 3 times trying to figure out what the actual point of it was. But
well, I'm thinking it does actually move the story forward. Well, I think that's exactly the main, I mean, it's obviously there for many reasons, but I think the most obvious reason for what happens later in the film is specifically that if she's making everything up in her mind or just crazy as they're trying to make us feel in the movie, obviously that's part of the idea of the film is to say maybe she is crazy. She's recreating things in her mind over and over, and every time or each time or whatever she creates in her mind isn't exactly what happened. And so it's trying to make us think, okay, so she may be an unreliable narrator. Thoughts?
Yeah, I think that is. That's part of it, but I don't think we go a whole lot longer before we find out she's not. I will say one of the things I like is that this is Eric, you mentioned certainly the therapist, and I think she does do a good job, but she doesn't do much in the first act of the film, and she shouldn't because she's the therapist, and her job is to sit there and listen. But somewhere in the second act, she starts to give a little bit of pushback. Right, she starts giving, and that's where the actress is really able to, because other than that, her performance is fine. Yeah, but she's mostly sitting there and go, uh-huh, and then what happened?
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't take a whole lot of acting skill. You just have to have some of that presence on screen.
Mm-hmm.
But then she does start giving some pushback later on in the movie,
mm-hmm.
And challenging her on her memories and what's real and what's not real, And that's where I think the actress really starts to come out. And I'm kind of sorry that we lose that actress because I do like that relationship. We kind of lose her completely once you get to the third act. And this is an important thing, though, also, is that when you are a therapist, right, you may know the person you're dealing with is wackadoodle, but the person you're dealing with may not realize it. You know, if you believe the invisible man is hiding underneath your bed, you may know it's not true, and I may know it's not true, or whatever. But the person who believes it, that's their reality that they're living in. And so you have to kind of deal with them on those terms until you're able to maybe coax them out of that. But you can't, you'll never get anywhere, right? If she started out with this, with Sybil, saying, look, you're fucking nuts, you're not psychic, right, you can't read minds, you lose the patient. You know, and this is, you know, for something I've been saying a lot on Facebook is that when, you know, I believe there's an objective reality. I believe there is a real reality around us. But our perceptions twist and distort that a bit, right? Or we see everything through what our senses are. And so the reality that we live in is determined by what we see and what we perceive and what we think, whether it is truly there or not. Right. And when you have arguments and discussions with people and you just start by immediately invalidating what their perception is, because it's not been your perception, their reality is not the same as your reality, then the you're never going to get anywhere. And that the important thing is to listen to what that other person says and see how they perceive reality and what their understanding is through their own experiences and through their own memory and through their own senses. Right. And so that's kind of what you have to do with as a therapist. You just have to sit there and listen. And that's what she does, at least through the first session. And I really did like that aspect of handling it.
Right. And exactly. That's what I felt was pretty good about that medical professional, is that she wasn't the typical Hollywood or any movie type of medical professional that would have immediately said you're wackadoodle or this is crazy, think of yourself, what are you talking about, look in the mirror, you know, out of that crap. She I think
Dr. Silberman from Terminator.
Yeah, Terminator, yeah, 2. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I think they wrote the character really
Right.
Fair. You know, very fair.
She never comes straight up and tells her that she's making it all up. She asks questions to get answers from her that give pieces of information that she might be making it up, right? Like,
right.
Were you on your medication? When did you stop taking your medication? And so on and so forth. But she doesn't say you're lying.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And that is a very good doctor or medical professional, I feel. All right. So let's see. What else do we got? Do we want to talk about? The film is the first half of the film is really a back and forth between the medical professional sessions and our lead character remembering the past year, basically, right? Isn't that right?
Yeah.
Now, I felt it was kind of weird. The one thing I immediately didn't like about the film, if there was something, was how she was willing to bang somebody the night of the funeral. That was just weird.
People do it all the time, Phil.
it happens a lot.
The thing Christy was just talking about is not made up. She is absolutely right.
Yeah,
people hook up at funerals all the time.
No, I know they hook up at funerals.
Don't go to bars, man. Go to the funeral parlors.
No. I understand people hook up at weddings and funerals and all these other places, you know, all the time. Jury selection, anything. But when the person that died was a person that was close to you, and then, you know what I'm saying? It wasn't like an uncle or a fourth cousin or a family friend. It was someone directly.
Phil, that if I can just speak from experience here, that makes it worse. That makes you want to just, yeah, that makes it worse. When you lose someone like a parent or somebody that's really close to you, your certain people, the need for that physical comfort, I'm going to call it, is many times a lot stronger because you just feel like you had your soul ripped out of you. And in order to sort of set things right and pull you out of despair, it's not just the physical touch and the comfort. But when you are in the middle of the sex act, right, you go places in your brain. You are completely focused on what is happening in your body. You are doing what you need to do in your mind to escalate your muscles to orgasm, you know, whether those are fantasies or whatever else it is. And so you do not have those, I don't know, however long the sex acts takes for that time 2 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever. It doesn't, I mean, I don't know, I've been doing it a lot longer, but whatever. The point is that you are not existing in the horrible reality that you have just been thrown into for that period of time. And they've done studies on this, and because I like to write about this sort of stuff, I've read a lot about it. It seems like it's a very unbelievable out there thing, and not everybody does it. It's not, you know, some people, they go to funerals because they've just lost their mom or their dad or something, and they just go completely dead inside and they don't want anything like that. Not everybody needs this. However, I think the point that I'm trying to make is that this is a normal human response. And even though it seems weird to you, that yes, there are people who will just meet a stranger after a funeral and be like, hey, can we go fuck? Like, seriously. And it is normal. It's not necessarily normal for the entire world, but it is normal. And I'm not trying to correct you or say that you're wrong. I just wanted to put that out there because, it is a real thing. And sometimes when you lose like the thing that you're closest to most in the world, like her mother, you know, she felt lost and untethered and desperate. And here's this nice, handsome guy offering to have coffee, and she probably was just like, well, I could use a cup of coffee, and then it sort of turned into the other thing, you know, because she was so desperate and so lonely. So, yeah, I could buy it.
All right, fair enough. Yeah. All right. So, what else we want to talk about? I'm good with where you want to go.
The story of how they actually took her and stole her baby was done in kind of flashback format, which I actually kind of appreciated the efficiency of it. And telling the story that way and just bits and pieces rather than trying to start the movie with them meeting and go through the whole thing in real time. I thought it was a good presentation of the information that you needed without having it drag on.
Good answer. Right. Good answer.
Now, I forgot to ask, what did you guys think of her, the real mother, the mother in the trailer and all that other stuff?
I'm unclear on that. I was hoping you would have answers for me.
Yeah, that seems like the kind of thing to have rewatched after you've seen the movie.
Well, and I did. I rewatched it today, and I still don't understand.
Unless it was just to get the social worker to adopt her, and then.
Well, it's to understand her. What was it? The early childhood trauma. For us to recognize that it was a thing, I'm going to guess, because they do mention that this is hereditary, and I don't mean the schizophrenia, though that is also certainly hereditary, but the supposed psychic abilities.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to guess that this is an issue with the mother. The mother, I'm guessing, OD'd.
Well, and it makes sense because she says that some of the medication she's been taking dampens her abilities, and the mother was in a trailer, clearly not well off, perhaps couldn't afford doctors and actual medication, so perhaps was self-medicating,
right,
and overdid it a little bit.
Yeah, that's kind of my presumption. Now, I'm curious, the thing I'm curious is the red paintings, right? Because there were paintings there done in watercolor. I have to assume the mother was doing them because the baby was a baby. It was like a toddler.
She could have been doing them with the toddler.
Right.
That
but
was
I'm,
my impression. Like they were sitting there sort of painting together, maybe.
Okay. And there was obviously a lot of red, you know, which of course symbolizes blood and death and rebirth and all that other stuff.
Well, and the red... Go ahead, Eric.
I was just going to say that's the other thing I don't quite understand the title of the movie, but we can talk about that later.
I kind of get it. Red is one of those colors, and I did notice that in this movie. There is an awful lot of red. The birds are a symbol too, but I'll talk about those in a second. Red is one of those colors that can go both ways, right? Like the color blue usually means peace and water and whatever, you know, you really can't look at the color blue and go, that represents anger or that represents something bad. You know, it might, if it's a pale kind of blue, the worst thing it might represent is like boredom or institutions, right? Like that one movie that we watched, what was it, where everything was in shades of blue? Oh God, I can't remember the name of that movie, but I liked what they did with that.
Oh, the one from last year, the one that was filmed on an iPhone?
Yes, yes.
Oh, Unsane.
That's the one. What the heck was the name of that movie?
Unsane.
That was the one thing in that movie that I remember about that movie that I really loved, was that how they used the color blue. But red can be used for love. Red can be used for anger. Red can represent blood. However, it can represent the blood as in murder, you know, blood of murder or blood of birth. It can represent boldness, but it can also represent hostility. So red is one of these colors that like this girl herself, like Sybil, it's very there's a duality to it. And so I kind of thought that what the red might be representing in this movie is the whole duality of, you know, her sanity, her life, the choices that she makes. Like, in other words, is she sane or is she not? Like, just like the color red can mean one thing or the other, everything, you know, you can think that she's crazy or you can think that she's not. You can think, does that make any sense? Am I being clear?
Well, at the same time as the title for the movie, it's like, I personally don't know if I would have gone that way, because, yeah, once you get into all this stuff, and you're making some valid points about the color red, but if you're like somebody, an audience, looking for a movie to watch, the dark red, it gives absolutely no indication of what the movie's about, and I think that's a little weird. That's all.
I just figured it meant blood, red blood, dark red blood, right?
Yeah, and they do talk about, you know, how the power is in the blood, which, because she has a rare blood type, which are kind of bullshit, but that's okay. I mean, just because you're like O negative doesn't mean you're psychic, but but it's in the blood, it's in the genes, right? So the blood is the thing, and that of course ties into the
Mike, you don't understand. She's GL negative.
She's negative Green Lantern.
It's not a standard blood type.
Yeah, I know. But regardless, I mean, it's for something like that, it's fine. But it's in the blood. So the blood is a thing, a motif that's kind of running through the film, you know, down to the little transfusion we get at the end of the film. So I'm going to assume, I'm with Phil, I think that it's probably referring to blood. I don't know.
But if you know nothing about the movie, the title still gives you no indication of what it's about.
Well, it's cool titled The Dark Red.
It is a cool title, but I do agree with Eric, and I see where he's coming from.
One of those 1978, you know, grindhouse trailers, The Dark Red. It's here. It's terrible. You know, that would be
dark, awesome. Dark. Red.
Yeah, exactly. It's only a movie, but the dark red is real.
Right, and I think if we stopped, we'd point out that we could come up with lots and lots of horror films where the titles were unbelievably vague, you know, and don't quite see how it connects with anything other than it seems somewhat sinister.
Yeah, that's right. Sunchoke, that was a great title. Don't know what it meant.
Sure. So I'm just going to go with blood and as a theme. And I tried looking it up on on Google, and I couldn't find like a quote or something. Like, was this from Shakespearean? Was it from like King Lear? You know, and how the fool referred to blood as the dark red or something like that. I don't. You know, I couldn't find that.
If you're in a sterile environment, like at a hospital or an office building, and you cut yourself and the blood drops fall onto the ground, it's dark red.
Right. And that's where I am.
I tried to use his announcer voice.
Exactly.
That is totally where I am with this.
Okay. I'll drop it.
No, it's fine. I mean, look, I'm not it's nice when, you know, like a movie like It Stains the Sand Red, you know, okay, that also refers to blood and a woman wandering through the desert with a zombie. Okay, the title makes some sense, right?
Yeah.
The Fly, that title makes some sense, right? It's, you know, Jeff Goldblum gets in trouble because he couldn't keep his fly up. But
this is one of those movies where it's like whichever one of you said it, you don't understand why that title is there until you actually watch the movie, and then you see that it's because she sees in red, like her internal self, her psychic ability, everything she sees, all the images, everybody that she calls to, she kind of sees them in red. And that's kind of I think that's where the dark red comes from.
Oh, yeah.
Because she talks about everything is red. She says it, I think, a couple times to the therapist or to David, I think.
Yeah, that's true. I think she does. Yeah, with David, yeah. Yeah, I wish I watched this last night like I recently have, but I had to watch it like late last week because I was watching season two of You with my wife, so I didn't get to watch it.
Did you like that?
As long as it wasn't The Office.
Oh, well, I haven't finished it yet. I'm still on it, yeah.
Very different than the first season.
Yeah, it is. I liked it though, and I liked how they ended it, and I won't spoil it for you.
Yep, no worries. All right, so back to this film here. I like. What about the bus scene? I thought that was pretty cool when she was trying to. She said she knew that girl was pregnant and all this other stuff. Remember that?
She was trying to convince her boyfriend that she's psychic.
Right. When in fact he already knew.
Right, but he can't say that.
One of the big twists. Yeah, right. Because he probably could see it, too. He probably knew the girl was pregnant, too.
Well, I got the idea that his power wasn't nearly as good as hers. In fact, they kind of show it towards the climax of the movie. At one point, he's trying to kind of help her with her psychic battle, but he doesn't last very long. I thought that was interesting, because at one point he even says out loud that his isn't nearly as powerful as hers.
Right. I think it also, though, like part of it's just reading body language, right? When he asks the woman, are you pregnant? You know, you see the look on her face and he backs off and he doesn't have to, or she says, I don't want, and he knows that she's pregnant, even though she doesn't confirm it. Right. So that could be a hint of his psychic reading. It might also be why she was having trouble reading him.
Well,
My theory
was that two people with the power can't read each other.
Well, either that or he was trying to block her.
Right.
It's a retroactive foreshadowing. It's not something you're going to pick up on the first time through, because she has an excuse. She said it doesn't always work, but it's a retroactive foreshadowing of saying, I think that there is something special that for whatever reason, probably related to his ability, she can't pick him up. But he might be picking something up from the woman on the bus, even if he can't pick up the whole thing from a distance the way that Sybil could.
Right.
Well,
the film's through Sybil's eyes anyway, right? We don't, and we're not supposed to know that he has the power either, right? Until later in the film.
Right. It's a reveal.
Yeah. So basically, the whole thing is that Sybil is. Actually, her common law husband is a plant. That's the big twist, the first big twist. It was all real. And he was a plant.
Right. Oh, and what I was going to say before that I decided to not say and wait till spoilers, is that we get a lot of movies where a woman is wronged and she goes out for revenge, and as Phil said, they turn into a superhero. But at least in this movie, they gave us a montage of her prepping for that. They put a thing up on the screen and said 9 months later, and then we see her working out, we see her taking shooting classes, and we see her doing all this stuff to prepare herself to go for her kid. And I appreciated that they just gave us a little bit of that, so it's not out of nowhere.
Do you think it's a coincidence they picked 9 months as the time?
No, I noted that, because it's like her rebirth, right? Her coming out to being a new person. But I really did appreciate also I appreciated the fact that montage was short.
Mm-hmm.
And that it wasn't like an action, like, oh, now I'm a bad bitch. Like, okay, we just see her doing the work that she needs to do, but it's not like, I'm going to have a six pack and all of this sort of stuff.
Right. And you have, I mean, we're at the point now where there's two things that have ruined montages for me. One of which is South Park, where they did an episode where they talk about, where it's like, and there's a song playing over it, which is just the montage song. If you want to learn something real fast, you need a montage. You just got this like an 80s parody thing.
Wasn't that from Team America?
Oh, was that from Team America?
I think it was.
Oh, maybe. Whichever.
Same guys.
Same sense of humor. So there's that. And on the other side of it, you have Breaking Bad, which often use montages, but they were phenomenal montages. And it's and they did it really well. And Better Call Saul uses a lot of them too. And it's very hard for anybody to quite measure up to what those shows have done in crafting montages to show the passage of time. That said, I do think it probably takes a little longer than 9 months to teach yourself to be a badass.
I would agree. Yeah, I mean, speaking of montages,
is there already?
Well, it's possible.
Yeah, possible, but it didn't seem that, because the whole scenes before she gets out of the sanitarium, she showed no signs of any of it. So she became a superhero in 9 months, and I guess you could say that's a nitpick, and that's a fair nitpick, I guess.
Extra credit for the creative
also,
use of
to
the
be fair,
tile.
She does have psychic powers.
Yes.
She does. Yeah, that's true. Speaking of terrible montages, one of the very first Bloody Bits reviews I did for Jason Lloyd was for a film called Pitchfork, and they had two montages in the first 20 minutes of the film, and it was just so stupid, because the director was a music video director, and this was like his first feature-length film, and so he didn't know how to make a film. Worst thing ever. Don't see Pitchfork; it's terrible. Chris Jenner will agree.
Just think about all the time we 400 and almost 50 episodes of Dark Discussions, and it's taken us 9 years to get here. Think about how much quicker this could have gone if we just did it all as a montage.
Ha!
Right?
In 5 minutes, we would be done. Just got to pick the right 80s song to play on the background.
That's right. And just show all of us sitting with microphones and headsets and in our basement.
Right. And we'll have forever. Like footage of Abe getting his driver's license placed in the background. Chrissy writing her novel. You know, the birth.
Phil drinking a beer. You know,
chasing the green dragon.
It was only that one episode. Eric without his pants and Mike having cats all over his computers.
Yes,
oh my God, I think we should do this and like raise money. You know? we're gonna make a video of montage of what we're really doing when we're on the podcast.
Footage of Pam wandering through some desolate urban nightmare trying to pick up the laser disc copy of The Exorcist.
Oh yeah, that's right. She went to like New York to get a.
Oh, it wasn't New York, but it was just some shithole down in, I think, was it Rockland County or Jersey? Yeah, it was just, oh God.
I'm sure Rockland County is a fine place. Wonderful, wonderful.
Like every other county on the planet, it depends on the neighborhood.
There you go.
There's a lot of wonderful places in Rockland County. There's a lot of places I wouldn't walk at night.
Fair enough. Back to the film. So they have the 9 month card that comes up, and then the montage and all the other stuff. So we know that she is a badass and looking for vengeance. But we didn't even explain what happened. So basically, the baby is gone. Her husband is gone, or common law husband, and she gets thrown into the mental institution. And so we have the whole flashback about what happens. And then but before all that happens, where the baby is gone and the husband is gone, she heads up to meet the future in-laws. And this is where everything goes to hell.
Yeah. You got to watch those in-laws.
Indeed. So with that happening, this is where we find out the supernatural elements and all this other stuff that's going on. And there's some bad people over there. What do we want to talk about?
Misunderstood.
Well, it's not like the Night King. No, because these people were kidnapping and doing all these other things.
As opposed to just straight up slaughtering hundreds of people.
Well, war, battles in war are a little, and be, they were a minority, and they were treated terrible by the humans.
Oh my God! So, all right, so the, moving on.
All right. So anyway, this film, yeah. So what do we want to talk about? This weird cult thing that's going on.
I thought it was interesting that they explained it, but didn't fill it out. Like you get the idea that they want her baby because the blood is the thing that has the power. And that's really all you get. There's kind of a, like at later in the movie, you get this sense that, this is a very powerful organization. These people that are rounding up babies and using their blood to get psychic powers. But you don't really get the full history of it. The way things go, the way the movie concludes, they left it open for a sequel, and I'd love to see that.
Well, I don't even mean that. I mean, I'm talking about how she heads to the in-laws, right? And then the in-laws pretend they're normal, and then suddenly everything goes to hell, right?
Right, because they're part of the secret organization I was just talking about. Phil, keep up with me.
Well, yeah, that's true. Well, let me ask you this, Eric. So the reason the baby's blood is so important is because they basically took her brother, who she didn't know was her brother, right, which is the common-law husband, and they have the baby together. So their bloods, which are half of this supernatural blood.
Wait, what?
That wasn't her brother.
Well, he was part of the family.
He was also psychic.
So he wasn't really, all right, yeah, maybe, I thought they were brothers or something, but a brother-sister, and she didn't know it.
No. What he told her is that he's got psychic powers like her, and then he's not part of that family.
That's right.
He's kind of kept too. There against his will.
That's right, he was kidnapped too. Okay, that's where I was wrong. So David and Sybil, by having a kid together, are, which David,
like
you can assume... Well, that's the thing. David is 50% psychic, and Sybil's 50% psychic. And so when they get together, they're hoping the blood will be more pure, I guess. And so the baby could be the ultimate thing. And we don't even know. Yeah, what's the point of the cult, except they wanted the people with the blood? Are they trying to take over the world or something?
I don't know.
It never explains
they,
it, right?
And that's what I was referring to, that they kind of give us a surface level that there's this group kidnapping babies with psychic blood because they want it. That's about all we learn. It's implied this is a very expansive, powerful group of people, but we never get any details.
Also they want the blood transfusions too, right? But the thing is what do they want to do? Yeah, exactly. So we have no idea what they plan to do when they become super psychic themselves.
Yeah,
if
there's a master plan, it's not revealed to us.
Yeah, it's not revealed. Right. So that's what you're
saying.
Well,
and I kind of like that, because I also liked when we get the reveal where the doctor kind of explains to her what the deal is. And I liked that a lot, because it fell at a good place in the story, and it made sense that he would tell her. And also, again, it moved the plot forward. So it wasn't like a lot of movies where you need to explain something and then it's like, here's a whole big info dump. Like, it was an info dump, but it was well placed and it was succinct, and it was within the context of 2 points moving forward. So it wasn't like the movie stopped so that they could give you this info dump. It was kind of in the midst of it, if that makes sense.
Yep.
Although there was that one comment, Eric, where David says, my father always says, if you can tap something at its source and manage the supply, anything is possible.
True.
So that to me kind of explained what they were doing, which I thought was cool, but
right.
I still
kind
am
of,
with
but
you.
Not really.
I liked how they... You know, and that's the thing, too. In some speculative pieces of work, whether it's a book or a movie or a short story or whatever, it's sometimes nice to just not know, to just go, this is the world. Here it is. You don't have to necessarily explain all of it.
Right.
You know, just sometimes it's just better to just say, this is what it is. And, you know, the characters accept it, so you should accept it. you know.
And that, and that's fine. And I don't think it works against this story at all. I'm just saying I would like to know more, and I would like to see a sequel because they totally set it up for one.
Yeah, they did. They did.
Kinda.
Kinda, sorta.
I mean, they left it open for one. I don't think they left, for me, any, like, really burning questions that are any different.
Oh, no, but you don't think that group's going to come back after the kid?
Oh, I'm sure, but this is kind of like, you know, a good example for this film might be, say, like, Firestarter, right? You very easily could do a sequel to Firestarter. I don't know that one was necessary. We've seen a number of films. What was the one? Oh crap! What was the film?
I'm just expressing a personal
preference. I get it. I understand. I'm just saying. What was the film that came out last year? The about the superpower girl and the that could stop time. Freaks.
Freaks. Yeah.
Freaks. Right. Absolutely could do
ruined it for me.
No, I didn't. Absolutely could do a sequel, not necessarily needing a sequel.
Again, I didn't say a sequel was needed. Yeah. I said I'd like to see one.
And that's fair. That's fair. I mean, I think out of all of us, Eric probably liked the film the most. So, I mean, if you like that story a lot, you could be happy with a sequel. And to be honest, yeah, they could have a sequel about the whole cult and all this other stuff too.
Yeah, that's what
I mean,
I'd like
I honestly could see that too, but you know, who knows? I mean, again, this is a small independent production, and
I know it's probably not going to happen. I'm just saying, I would love to see a movie where they come back after the kid, and we learn more about the cult and what their history is and what their ultimate goal is, and Sybil gets some allies, and perhaps takes
the kid
down.
Is like 10 years,
or the kid's super powerful.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was thinking. Like, what was that? That one with the guy that was in the office, and he played the father, and then Elizabeth Banks played the mother. What the hell was that movie called? The superhero evil kid film.
Oh, Brightburn. What
was that? Yeah, Brightburn. Yeah.
When you say somebody in the office, Phil, that's like 30 people. You gotta be more specific.
I know. I haven't watched Office for really deeply for a while, so I forgot.
It's been at least a week.
It's been at least a week, and I forget
because just last week you were telling me you were gonna go watch The Office,
and then you watched and by which I mean not the YouTube series. I'm talking about the closed circuit cameras you put in your house.
Oh yikes.
Oh, fuck. But Roy from The Office. That's it, Roy.
I know who you're talking about now.
Could have just said Roy from The Office.
These actors also have names, too, that are...
Well, that's like the reason Rain say it.
Yeah.
Well, usually, anytime I say Roy from The Office, Eric always goes, his name's not Roy, Phil. That's his character from TV.
Exactly. But you know when he dies, that's what they're going to say. Roy from The Office has died.
Having gone through the Ranger experience with you, I feel better now because you're like that way with people in person. You just don't even bother to learn their actual name.
Right. Yeah, so the Ranger.
So at least you're consistent.
Yes, that's true. And I forget the guy's name. It's Jeremy Holm, right?
Isn't there that right? You go. There you go.
The Ranger. All right. So, the kick-ass part. I thought it was pretty good. I actually was kind of disappointed that she didn't take down everybody and burn down the whole place and level it. I was hoping everything would go down. I was hoping she would pull out the gas tanks. But she did take out some of the people. That was pretty cool.
Right. Well, and I was a little unclear as to maybe somebody else can fill me in here if you have a theory. Is it, what happened? Like she got into a showdown with the, let's just call it mother-in-law for lack of a better term, at the end of the movie, and clearly took her out. But I was unsure of her fate. Was she dead? Was she a vegetable?
No, I killed her.
They show her cut the line that was transfusing the blood, but I don't think she murdered her, did she?
I thought she did, yes, because you see her wrist laying in a pool of blood.
Yeah, but that's coming out of
the cut. Yeah, but I wasn't sure. Maybe she cut her wrist too? I don't know.
The tube was behind the arm, so I don't know. Like I watched it again today, and I was looking for it, and my impression was that blood was coming out of the tube that she just cut.
Right. Well, I was hoping she killed her because that woman is dangerous. She's worse than the husband, for crying out loud. But again, they probably, if they thought this, that's the thing. See, this is the thing. I was thinking this film, they were hoping they could, even though it has no stars in it, I think they were hoping it could be like picked up by a Blumhouse or something. Uh-huh. And if it did really good, they had it set up for the mother-in-law to come back as the main villain in the second film, assuming they wanted to say that she, in other words, if they did a second film, they could still say that she's alive, even though they could also say she's dead, you know?
So, Christy, you thought she was dead?
I got the impression she was dead, yes.
What about you, Mike?
I wasn't sure, honestly.
Okay.
I wasn't sure why she, like, died or slipped into a coma because she cut the cord. You know, not the pseudo-umbilical cord connecting them.
Well, and let's talk about the psychic battle for a moment, because... Because
I think she had an aneurysm or something.
Maybe. Because what she does is she has Sybil's son, and she pretty much hooks a tube up directly from his vein to hers to get his blood and therefore the psychic powers. And they get into this psychic battle in their heads. And Sybil tricks her and traps her in part of her mind. And at that point, she comes out of it and goes and cuts the tube. Now, what we see happen is she cuts the tube. And the woman collapses on the floor. So I don't know if did Sybil trap her psyche in her head and she's just in there now? Or did it go back into her own head when she cut the tube because the psychic powers didn't exist anymore? Or is it gone forever? Or I'm very unclear as to what her state is.
Right. Yeah. The most logical thing is that she became a vegetable, but.
And that's what I was thinking.
Yeah. There's really no confirmation. No, there isn't. And I can't believe they would just let her live because she's dangerous and she'd be coming after her. It's left open-ended, but I'm going to go with Chrissy and what you said, Eric, which is she's kaput. I mean, even if she's brain dead, she's dead. Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know what you're saying. Okay.
Yeah.
I was just curious as to what other people's take were, because to me it was ambiguous.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it was. I was not happy with that and that her ending, like I was with the other people that she killed. Because mm-hmm. the other people, I mean, you know, she like killed them, and I was like, yes, kill those motherfuckers. But this one, I was like,
I particularly enjoyed it when she took out the dad. Because he said some really shitty stuff to her right before she blew his brains all over the place. He hit that.
That was good. He sure did. Yeah. I think it was they were hoping there was playing at like the festivals at down in Austin. You know, Blumhouse is probably sitting there, other people sitting there, and I'm thinking they were hoping they made it in a way that they were hoping that it would be picked up and they could make a sequel. That's what I'm thinking.
Maybe.
That's all I can think. Yeah, so I don't know. Let's see. Anything else? We missed anything? There was any other scenes or plot points that we missed that anybody wanted to bring up?
I don't have much more. The only thing I really wanted to mention was it was interesting that they had the finch in the cage the whole time that she was in the psychiatric ward.
Yeah, that
and then
was
at
weird.
The end, yeah, well, it's really just a symbol. It was like the caged bird singing, basically. I know okay. why the caged bird sings. That's kind of why I – because she says at one point in the movie, I know that he put me in here to keep me safe. Mm-hmm. And she's also telling her story. So I also thought it had a lot to do with – oh, and then at the end, when she carries her son out, of course, we have the image of all the birds taking off in the trees. They're free to fly. So the bird is kind of a minor symbol in this movie, but basically it's a symbol of, you know, her being trapped in a cage, and then she is a transformed person that can finally fly at the end because she also is finally comfortable with herself and who and what she is, you know, instead of being a victim at the end of the film. So it does work for me. It did work for me, but that's, I think, Eric, that's what that was a symbol of.
Okay.
It was, you know, it was her being trapped. Like, in other words, she's the bird in the cage and she's basically singing. Anyway, you know, she's telling her story. She's, and through this song, she is going to eventually transform and set herself out of the cage and fly free. I also,
I like it.
Yeah, I think it works. I mean, I don't know if that's what they really intended, but it just seemed very, that was the first thing that leapt out at me. And there was something else, but I forgot it. So whatever it is, it's probably not that important.
Now, when they showed the bird at the very beginning of the movie, I was like, is that a normal thing to have in a psychiatric ward?
Probably not. Probably not. But, you know, it is the movies. So whatever they can do.
Oh, like George. I'll pet him and hug him and cuddle him and love him. And then the next day, the bird's dead.
Yep. Right.
Whoops. Yeah, yeah.
Oopsie daisy.
Of mice and men. Oh, jeez. What do you got? Anything else on the movie? Anyone? I guess we can come back later to give our final thoughts on the film. But before that, maybe folks may have some things you've watched or read or whatever that people listening may be interested in that is genre related. What's that with you, Eric? You usually have a good load of stuff.
Well, I finally got my 4K copy of Jaws and was able to watch that.
The best part is that you got it after I did, and I ordered mine like weeks after you did.
Actually, I disagree. That's not the best part.
I thought
the best part.
And I don't even have a 4K TV to enjoy it on yet.
The best part is you can see everything clearly mm-hmm. in the beginning scene of the naked chick.
Oh, jeez.
Am I not right?
I knew that was coming.
Am I not right? Am I not right?
You're Dark. Right, but that's the least interesting thing about the movie. let's see. What else have I watched here? Let's see. It's the 18th, which means the 11th. So I'm looking at my Letterboxd diary here. Oh, I watched Gemini Man because it was a 99-cent rental, and that's what I was willing to spend to watch that with Will Smith. It's okay. if it's interesting to you, check it out. If it's not, don't. It's nothing that you gotta see. I also picked up the 2005 Steven Spielberg version of War of the Worlds on 4K disc and watched that. On that is awesome on 4K.
That is a great film.
Looks great and film. Sounds phenomenal.
Which film?
War of the Worlds.
War of the Worlds with Tom Cruise. Tom Cruise.
Yep.
Tom Cruise is awesome.
He is, although I gotta say, it's a really weird script choice in that movie to make him such a dick. And then also the hero of the movie is like, meh, all right,
well,
whatever.
He was supposed to learn not to be a dick.
Well, I know he's supposed to. I don't know if he did.
Christy would agree that he comes out at the end in other words, it's a hero's journey. What's the quote, Chrissy? When someone's a dick at the beginning and then by the end they are good people and heroes and all that. What's that called in writing?
Talking about a redemption tale?
No, you're talking about character conflict, crisis change. Is that what you're talking about? Character conflict, crisis change. Yeah.
So character, he's a dick. Conflict, war of the worlds. Change, not a dick. Or at least less of a dick.
Less of a dick. Well, the way it's supposed to work is that you're a character and then you're presented with a conflict and you undergo a crisis because of that conflict, and that crisis leads you to a change or a different way of looking at the world or whatever it is. That's the whole thing behind it, which is kind of what a lot of times it is really one of those things that's modeled in real life, actually, even though it's a fiction technique, because think about it, you know, when shit hits the fan, after you go through any kind of trauma or any kind of crisis or any kind of battle or whatever it is, even if it's a small thing, you know, you're changed in some way. Like, you have either grown from the experience or you haven't. You know, you've either and of course, too, the change part is not always positive. You know, like, for example, you take a man whose wife gets very ill and she dies. And instead of him transforming and thinking, I really miss her, but I need to move on and I can love someone else, that man might become bitter instead and say, you know what, the world, whoever did this to me, I'm just going to be an asshole for the rest of my life. So not every character conflict, crisis, change is positive. And also, there is also character conflict, crisis, lack of change. There are characters that don't change. Like, you can throw stuff at them and they learn nothing from the experience. Mm. And that sometimes happens in real life too. I mean, think of how many times you keep going back to date the same asshole, right? You never learn. You know what I mean? It's like, I'm serious. It's like, it's kind of interesting when you sit around and think about some of these fiction techniques and you go, oh yeah, that kind of is like real life. It's like so funny. But yeah, I'm sorry, Phil, I didn't mean to interrupt. That's what I was saying. Anyway.
So, other things I have watched. I also watched, if you buy Jaws, whether it's on Blu-ray or 4K, the 4K has both the making of Jaws feature and actually a short film. Actually, I think it's feature length, called The Shark Is Still Working, The Impact and Legacy of Jaws, both of which are really interesting if you're into the movie.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think I have that on one of my things somewhere.
Yeah, I think they were both on the Blu-ray too. I also watched the HBO series Watchmen, which I had heard a bunch of people say a bunch of good things about back when it was originally airing, and just never caught up with it.
That's right. So you got HBO now because it has the Max, right? Because you quit HBO for a little bit.
For a little bit. Yep. I had to sign back up again for Westworld.
Gotcha. Right.
Yeah. So, I found out why it came up again recently. there's a whole lot of civil rights stuff in that story, and I found it to be really well done and completely captivating, and would highly recommend it to anyone who's into genre stuff. And I believe HBO is also making it available to watch for free right now, because Juneteenth is coming up. So if you have any interest in that at all, check it out. You don't have to be an expert in The Watchmen to enjoy it, because I'm not. And you kind of get thrown in the deep end and have to kind of like catch up as you go along, but it's fine. In fact, it makes the viewing experience a little more interesting. I found it particularly amusing
that there were two different points in the story where our main character sees something totally bizarre. And in both cases, sitting on my couch, I said out loud, "What the fuck?" And the very next second on the screen, the main character said, "What the fuck?" So we were on the same page. But yeah, I would give Watchmen a watch. It's really good stuff.
Yeah, and it's if you are a fan of the original comic graphic novel, as I am, it is a sequel to that. It is not a sequel to the Snyder film. It is set 30 years later. There's really just one big difference between the Snyder film and the comic, and that difference is very apparent, I think, in the fourth episode. The show starts with very little of the original story influencing it, and I saw a lot of people complaining about it. By the time you get four episodes in, pretty much every character, or almost every character from the original story, is pulled into it, with one notable exception, at least the ones who are still alive. And they do end up connecting all the dots by the end. And I think it was very satisfying. Civil rights, like you said, Eric, is a very important part. I just didn't find it terribly preachy, which tends to annoy me and is always the risk when you do something like that.
Well, and also centers around an event that is historical.
Right.
It actually happened. And I did not learn about this event until this year. Because they sure didn't teach it to me in high school, that in 1921 in Tulsa, Oklahoma, depending on who you listen to, hundreds, if not thousands, of black people were massacred.
It was thousands, yeah. It's the largest riot in U.S. history.
And, like nobody talks about it, at least not in our educational system. Am I wrong, Mike? Are they teaching that now?
Well, not that I know of, and... See, this was going back to what I was saying before, right? About perception is our reality. And a lot of people like you or me, when The Watchmen aired a year ago, had never heard of this. And I think this is what pulled it out.
Mm-hmm.
But I know a lot of people I know who are people of color were like, well, of course you haven't. You know, and you're like, oh. And this is one of the many, many things that has gotten me listening. I thank, I'm sure he's not listening, but Alfred Guy, who I know through the Scares the Care charity, and he's been sharing a lot of stories like that, that I've never heard of. And I have no idea if it's stories that are passed around African-American families, you know, and they're raised and told about or not. I've got no clue, but there are stuff that I didn't know happened. And when you see those stories, it's a little bit easier to understand the very different worldview some of us
yes.
have about the race relations, post-Civil War race relations. Obviously, we're all pretty much on the same page, I hope, you know, with the pre-Civil War race relations not being a great thing. Yeah.
And just given what's going on in the world right now, with the protests and Black Lives Matter movement. If you watch Watchmen, not only is it an entertaining piece of fiction, but it also has a little bit of history there, including this incident in Tulsa, Oklahoma, which I never knew about before. And to me, it's a little bit horrifying that it doesn't get taught in school.
I
think it's a good thing for more people to know about it.
We weren't taught about it. In fact, I only learned about it a year or maybe two ago because the company that I work for has a very strong diversity core. And they always make sure they bring it up every year and explain it and, you know, stuff like that. They send us emails and, you know, they talk about it. So thanks to my company, that's how I learned about it. But I didn't know. I had never heard of it before. Nobody ever taught me in school.
Yeah.
I mean, we learned about the basics.
Oh, yeah, I had
stuff,
to look it
you
up.
You know, the civil rights movement. Ago. Yeah, but I didn't hear about that until only a couple of years ago.
I'll also say there was...
I only heard about it 6 days ago, and so I had to do the Google on it and
read
it. So.
And you read and you were like, holy shit, right?
Yeah, indeed. I think the other thing is that I want to mention, I saw when that first started, a lot of people were very upset because in the HBO series, there's a white supremacist or white nationalist group that have taken to wearing the mask of the character Rorschach from the original series. And people got very offended because that they were using Rorschach, who was kind of a cool character for a lot of people because he was the ass kicker and the bitter psychopath. And they said, you know, because he wasn't a racist. And it's like, well, have you read the book? Because if you read between the lines, he's not, no, not really. He's kind of, you know, a little retrograde in some of those views he has, even for 1985. He's kind of, he doesn't come right out and say certain things that would, like, that makes it obvious he was a racist because he's a point of view character in the story. But yeah, there are definitely some ethnic issues that he has in his journal. So if that's going to be an issue for you again, go back to the source material. It's okay.
Yeah, so that's a high recommend for me. I really enjoyed the whole thing on multiple levels.
Right.
And that's pretty much it for what I've been watching.
All right, very well. What about you, Chrissy? Any stuff that you've been watching that's genre related?
No. I binged a non-genre series this week that I like on Netflix. And then pretty much I've just been reading. I'm working my way through Providence Noir, which is excellent. And I've just been trying to keep up with all my various projects. I'm really kind of drowning. So, yeah. But I do have several on my list. I have that one you mentioned, Warning, Do Not Play. I have the bat. What's the one? A body cam that you told me about, Phil? That's on my list.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And, you know. That's pretty much it. I've got and that other one that you said we were going to do, Little Joe or whatever that was. So those are on my list. But yeah, I'm just what happens is I get home on the weekends and then I have so much I want to do that I don't take any time to just sit around and like watch a movie. I don't. And I have to start actually having movie night because when the movies were open, and I felt, and even now they're talking about they're going to reopen, but I doubt I'll be going back anytime soon. That was my night to go see a movie. You know, that was my night to go get some brain turn down time. And I just don't get it now. You know, I have to make a point to be like, I'm going to sit here and watch this, you know? So, yeah. So no, I have not seen much.
Very good.
This week, I hope to get to some stuff.
All right. No worries. Yeah, for me, I actually saw Feedback, the film that I was suggested as a topic possibly for the podcast. It's really good. It's really good. It stars Eddie Marson, the guy that one of the lead actors in The World's End. He plays the lead in this film here. Basically, he's a guy that does a talk radio show at night. And some bad people break into the studio and take over. And so it's a thriller, nail biter, all the way to the end. It's a really, really good film. High recommend by me. And then I saw, again, Emily Blunt's very first film, My Summer of Love, directed by Academy Award director Powell Polakowski. Excellent film, third time watching it. High recommend there. And that's pretty much for me. And I'm still reading Swan Song, Robert McCannon's book. Almost done. It's a 1,000-page book. So
it's a big book.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. I haven't started reading it yet, but it's in my Kindle library now. Max Brooks released a new book. It's a Bigfoot book called Devolution. So that's I'm gonna try and start reading
What's
that.
What's it called again?
Devolution.
Devolution. Oh, interesting. All right. That's cool.
Yeah.
Speaking of authors, I spoke to MJ Preston on the phone about 2 days ago. He gave me a call and I was talking to him. So it's good to hear from him. He's doing well.
He was recently on the Stephen King podcast, which is funny because Stephen King doesn't actually run the podcast. Yeah, okay. MJ Preston.
Yeah.
Why is it called the Stephen King podcast?
Because they usually talk about Stephen King.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, gotcha.
And Stephen King's in Maine, which is kind of close to Canada, which is how they bring in MJ Preston.
Now, Mike, what about yourself? Any genre stuff you wanted to mention?
Well, I haven't really been watching a lot. I did finish watching. I mentioned this, I think 2 weeks ago, I finished watching Captive State, and it was an movie. I will say it had the longest opening explanatory blurbs that I can ever remember seeing in a movie. And if you have to put that much upfront information to explain basically an alien invasion film, then you are just not writing well. Let's see. I have been watching... I did watch a movie, indie film called Extraordinary a couple of nights ago. It's a British comedy about a psychic investigator. It's cute. It's got its moments. It's got the villain of the film is played by Saturday Night Live alumnus Will Forte from Last Man on Earth. It was another thing he did. And MacGruber. But it's a cute movie. If you have a chance to catch it. I've rented it on sale, I think, from Vudu. I'm sure it's going to be on Shudder and whatnot soon enough. It's got a lot of great reviews. Everyone else seemed to have liked it more than I did, which, again, that could just be where my headspace is at in the last couple of weeks. I have been watching with my wife the, I think it's TNT series based on the movie Snowpiercer, which, of course, is based on the French comic that is titled something French, at least Snowpiercer or something like that. And I kind of like it. It's weird because Snowpiercer isn't a thing where you would think you could get much out of it as a 10 episode series. I think they're actually greenlit for a second season. And because it is taking a thing and turning into a TV series, naturally it's a detective story. But it does kind of get a little bit more into the ins and outs. There's a major, major change in the character of Mr. Wilford that's revealed in the first episode. I have no idea if it's true to the comics or not. It's definitely a change from the film. It is its own thing. It takes the same basic premise and runs with it, though, and I've been enjoying it.
I did watch the first couple of episodes. I did watch the first couple episodes of that, Mike. I liked it. I thought it was interesting.
What was Jennifer Connelly in it?
Jennifer Connelly is fine. Yeah, she's gone. I remember her from Labyrinth when she's grown up into a nice little MILF. Jennifer Connelly is somebody that I had a crush on way back in the day, and that one's never gone away. Same as with Gina Davis. And she plays basically the train liaison between Mr. Wilford and the rest of the train, and the connection, because the basic story is that there is somebody in the train who's murdered, and they need to, and one of the tailies, if you the people in the last class, who are the poor and wretched refuse of humanity, who is a former homicide detective. And they basically have to bring him up front to investigate the murder. And the actual murder part of it, again, is a 10-episode series. That investigation is wrapped up, I think, by episode 4, so it's not what the entire series is about. They just had episode 5, which is the trial of the accused murderer. But part of it is also, as was in the case of the film, the social tension of the different classes on the train and you know, the plot to rebel and overthrow Mr. Wilford. And that's really, I think, where the series is going to be going. I don't know how much more they have, if they have another 15 episodes in them that are compelling. But I've enjoyed it. So
what station's it on again?
It's on TNT.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. So you need cable, just watch it.
Yeah. I also want to point out, by the way, something we have talked about in the past, but Netflix has picked up the rights to Hannibal, the TV series. If anybody happened to miss it, it was the Brian Fuller series with Mads Mikkelsen. I highly recommend you watch it. It's definitely strange. It's definitely out there.
I never finished it.
And it's really by the time the third season, I think, is where they get to Manhunter.
I think I got through season two and never finished up with season three.
So all three seasons are on Netflix. There has been rumors for a long time, you know, that this is not a series that they've ever given up on, that they would like to bring back. I think both Mads Mikkelsen and you, are open to reprising their roles in the series. It's got some really, really good stuff, and I think it's worth sticking with if you can.
All right, very good. Anything else, Mike?
Not that I can think of, no.
All right, sounds good. So before we get into final thoughts, Eric, you actually do another podcast with your buddy Dan.
Yeah, my other podcast is a general interest podcast called the Askancity Podcast. That's spelled Askancity. You can get it wherever you found this one.
Excellent, excellent. And Chrissy, you actually have a PDF that people could download?
Yeah, I do. I have a magazine. The spring issue of my dark literary magazine, 34 Orchard, is available, and that's at 34orchard.com. My short story collection is called The Shadows Behind, and that was published last year, and you can still get that. And also, just recently, my short story Threading the Needle was just released in a cookbook called Ghastly Gastronomy. And that's available on Amazon or from Madness Heart Press on their website. And you get a better deal at the Madness Heart Press, actually, because if you would rather get a PDF or, you know, and you don't have a Kindle and you want a different format, you can get it there. So, yeah, so those are my recent things lately. And my short story Omniscience is coming out in Orca Lit. Oh, I think July 1st it gets released. So I have a lot going on right now. It's a lot.
Very good. Excellent. And Mike, me, you, and Eric are doing another podcast that's now coming back.
Yeah. So how many episodes ever actually made it out, Phil?
One.
Only one, but Baby Driver is already ready to go. So I just created an RSS feed for it.
Okay. And again, this is a lot of work. I'm well aware of it, but we still are going to bust Phil's chops on this from time to time. The other podcast is called Cinema a la Carte, where we discuss films that are not necessarily films that would comfortably fit in the dark discussions category, though we have discussed films that I think may skirt the edges. A film like Baby Driver was one. What was the other Hostels? Was another one, the Western from a couple of years ago. Our most recent one was Forbidden Planet, which again maybe fits in dark discussions, maybe doesn't. And it's a kind of a once a month thing when we don't have anything else going on, like Bullets, Brothels, and Bots. And we rotate our picks. Eric picks, I pick, Phil picks, and our next film coming up is one Phil has chosen. And it is one that a film I've been intending to revisit for a while from, mid-2000s, I think. So I'm excited to look at that. I don't know if we want to give that one away yet. But if you want to listen to that, you can download it from, of course, darkdiscussions.com or through any of the various streaming services that carries Dark Discussions. So your iTunes or iPodcast or whatever they're calling the service now, and Google Play and Stitcher and whatever else is out there.
Yep, very good, very good. All right, so let's get our final thoughts of this film. So, Eric, why don't you start?
I liked this movie. Check it out.
All right. For me, yeah, The Dark Red is a pretty solid film, and it's something that folks should probably at least give a look at. Mike.
Yeah, like I said, I had trouble it had trouble holding my interest, and that could just very well be where my headspace is. It could also just be that it was a film that was hung on tropes that I've felt like I've seen a lot in relatively recent years, and so it didn't really grab me or excite me in any way. Again, I don't know that it's the fault of the movie. The movie itself is well crafted in a lot of ways. It has some interesting things. So I would listen more to everybody else this time around than me necessarily, because it really could just be where my brain was.
All right. Chrissy.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this film. I recommend it. I think it's fresh. It's a little bit different. But if you've been listening the whole time, then I would just say that I would say, yes, definitely watch it, with the caveat that you may have to. It's just one of those things you're going to want to focus on. So if you're looking for something to turn your brain off, this is it. But if you just want kind of light, pleasant, you know, horror for a good time, then this really isn't it. But this is a lot of fun. I highly recommend it.
All right. Very good. So once again, The Dark Red, though it says 2018, it was released, I think, in February of this year, 2020, everywhere prior to the festival run. Once again, directed by Mr. Bush. His name's Dan, I think, or something like that. But he hasn't done much until now, because his last main film, Dan Bush, was The Signal, and so he's back and available anywhere for VOD rental. So I guess with all that stated, Eric, why don't you lead us out?
All right. Thanks for tuning in and listening. Let's talk about The Dark Red. Come back next time. We'll have another topic.